This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
The world is a beautiful place. And we're going to prove that talking some sports over the next couple hours. What's going on? Happy Wednesday. Bill Ryder with you. A lot of things to get to. A lot of drama in the world. Some folks who should know better looked into the mirror and saying, oh my God, that's what I look like. Yes, Brooklyn Nets, that is what you look like. We are coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments, and closing costs online in real time? Rocket can. You know what does not come easy to folks? Self-awareness. A little bit of a theme throughout the... It's a self-awareness Wednesday. Someone please send a message in no particular order to Kevin Durant and the Nets. To the folks who are convinced every quarterback in this draft class is going to be a star and forget they said the same thing about Sam Darnold a few years ago. To Urban already mired in drama, if not dysfunction. And to Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. All topics we will dive into over the course of the next couple hours. If you'd like to assist us in working our way through some of this drama, some of this dysfunction, a couple ways for you to reach out. No, not Bitcoin. That's not how that works. But there is a phone line, 855-212-4CBS. Yes, you can call it to have the executive producer, Tom DiBenedetto, put you on the air. No, he cannot buy you Bitcoin if you call in. So just so we understand ourselves this time around. Also, the old Twitter machine, Sports Writer, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. Tom's on there, producer underscore Tom. Andrew Bogish is back at Andrew Bogish at CBS Sports Radio. And of course, if you're away from your wonderful and marvelous affiliate who are kind enough, and if we do say so ourselves, wise enough to put us on the air, Odyssey.com is the other spot if you want to stream the program. We'll get to a bunch of stuff. We'll do buy or sell at the end of the show. It's not easy to put together massive egos and have massive success. That's always been true. That's the reality of not just sports, but just personalities in general. This happens in dating, right? You can have someone who on paper, who in appearance, who in temperament and whatever it is you're looking for, just seems like the right person. You can, like me, date that person. And then you can wake up and realize, hell no. It happens. Complicated creatures. And that's why the surety with which people looked at the Brooklyn Nets and said, of course, they're going to be NBA champions. Look at the talent. Baffled me. We've seen this story before. It can work, but it doesn't always work. And you know all the things, right? James Harden has trouble remembering how to shoot a three-point shot in big playoff games. That's a borderline problem. He's also a overwhelmingly talented basketball player most of the time. Historically great. This is before the injury. All right, you knew that. I don't know if this is true, but I'm going to say it. Kyrie Irving might be the most unlikable star in the NBA. Who's not even a top 10 player? I mean, he's really good. The Ringer did. It was interesting. They did their top 25 players in the association with some explanations. And I'll quibble with some of it. I think LeBron's one. I don't think, do I really believe that Nikola Jokic is the best? I don't believe that. But I get it. He's going to win the MVP, I understand. I also think Giannis was a little low. But Kyrie at 16, it's about right. It feels like the right sort of high, like 15 to 22. Think about how much attention Kyrie gets. A lot of that's the drama. And then you have Kevin Durant, who, I'm not even talking about the unreliability of these guys physically, which is its own legitimate chunk of the percentage of why I think surety, certainty, absolutism, as it relates to believing in the Brooklyn Nets, is a mistake. I also don't think you should be sure that they're going to fail. I just think you should be sure it's one of the legitimate and reasonable outcomes. Continuity matters. Consistency matters. Playing together matters. Especially in the NBA. The NBA is the ultimate team sport that's about the individuals that you have. It's unique that way. It is a team sport, and the team can only win if you have two or three excellent individuals. You know, maybe the Bucks have, but they haven't Giannis, right, as a star. They haven't Chris Middleton, who last night and in a lot of these games has played like an all-star. He has to. And they haven't Drew Holiday, who, by the way, made the Ringer's top 25 list, which I thought was wise and on point. Yeah, the guy's amazing defensively, really good offensively, fits in the selfless. Continuity matters. And the Nets losing to Milwaukee last night, for me, highlighted several things. None of them are final, but several important things. One, in really big games, the Brooklyn Nets defense is abysmal. It is abysmal because they're not good defensively. The Golden State Warriors a few years ago, which had been a perennial top 10 defensive team, weren't. And they couldn't quite flip that switch. And it's one of the reasons they didn't win one of the championships that they failed to get. It's hard to do that. Defense, more than offense, is a habit-based, muscle memory-based reality based on the team, not the individual. Look, you can Allen Iverson practice all you want. You cannot connect with your teammates. If you got one guy in a moment who can go get buckets, he can do that on his own, right? Steph Curry can go get buckets on his own. Kevin Durant can go get buckets on his own. You cannot individually play defense at an equivalent level, at a game-changing level. It's a big weakness of the Nets. You saw it last night. They gave up 124 points to Milwaukee. And Milwaukee, by the way, I think what a game and a half behind for that two seed, which is significant because right now the three seed would play the Heat in the first round, which you don't want, and the two seed will play, somebody that comes out of the 7-8 win. So there's time. But the Bucks have the tiebreaker now. Here's something else we saw from that game. Giannis is a stud. Middleton can play like an MVP. And Drew Holiday is really, really dynamic. But the main thing that was on display is the same thing I've been preaching for months. The same thing that's always been a reality. And that is the Nets could have three remarkably likable personalities who are in this together, right? Who are, for all their problems to the outside world, great teammates. Take the 2010-11 Miami Heat, and they could still come up short because that's exactly what happened to the 2010-11 Miami Heat. How do you know, Ryder? Well, I'll tell you. I lived in Kansas City. On about 24 hours' notice, I moved to Miami, Florida, and I covered that team with rigor, with accuracy, and with a candor that did not make me wildly popular. But I was right. They just weren't ready as a team. But Bosch was willing to sacrifice. Dwayne Wade was more than happy to be the second guy. And LeBron James, for whatever his problems, whatever quibbles you have with him, is a great teammate with his teammates, if they're guys like Chris Bosch and Dwayne Wade. That is not the personality of the Nets. And so Steve Nash, talking about continuity last night, sounds like someone explaining for the first time out loud the obvious reality that the entire world has known about them for a long time. The lack of self-awareness here, to me, now that it's not true, it's just been true for months, was pretty stunning.
I think it's a great experience for us to recognize where we are. You know, we've got a gap to make up here. So we understand that's a team that's been running the same offense, been playing together, same schemes on defense for years now, gone deep into the playoffs, and that's something that we don't have. So how can we make up that gap?
You could get a time machine. You could, you know, wait till next year. You're not going to make up the gap. I wish he'd added, and these guys like each other. It's really refreshing, but I know he can't. And I like Steve. He's a good guy. The Nets are not winning an NBA championship this year. They're just not. They're just not. Maybe they'll make a run. They're talented enough to make a run. But you're talking about a team now when KD and Kyrie Irving play together that are under 500. They've only played 7 games together as a threesome. Harden, Kevin Durant, Kyrie. With KD and Kyrie, they're 7-8, I believe. I mean, they're not that good. And that's the other thing. All three of them is really interesting and even more problematic, right, in terms of the personalities you're piling on top. But Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are amazing together. That's not a guarantee of championships. Jimmy Butler and Bam, both on the Ringer's top 25, by the way, and rightfully so, are a great duo. No one is anointing them NBA champions. I just told you, Drew Holiday made the list. Giannis did too. I think it's 6. Should be higher, but whatever. Very similar. The Ringer's rankings on Giannis to Drew Holiday is not that far off from KD to Kyrie. Why are KD and Kyrie sure thing championship contenders and the Bucks are a joke? I don't understand. Because Chris Middleton's healthy, last time I checked, and an actual all-star. Going to bring up Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, but Paul George is one of the two names I was going to bring up, so we all know that's not a good example. So there's that. I'm going to play you this clip, but it just annoys the hell out of me with Kevin Durant. I like it when guys say the obvious like it makes them really smart. Let me do an example. Look, this is me pretending to be the best radio show host in America. Here's the thing about me. I talk on the radio, and my voice gives you words. And those words are about sports. Oh, I crushed it. Cool. Me and every other schmo out there doing this for a living. So I just want you to pay attention to Kevin Durant when he talks about the same topic, breaking the news that there's guys on his team who aren't 12.
That is a huge factor. I mean, continuity is a big thing in this league, but we got veterans on this team that played in different situations that kind of that know pretty much every terminology that goes on in this league and every kind of set that we run on both sides. So that's in our advantage as well, having that veteran leadership.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. I didn't know you had veterans who play on the team who know the sets. And not just the offensive sets, guys. The defensive sets. You're right. It's a huge advantage. I mean, it's pretty amazing in a league made up of children with no other veterans. You're right. You're the only team in the NBA. The other 29 teams, it's a pretty amazing, just sort of odd reality of the year. Everyone else is a rookie. What are you talking about?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, we don't have any continuity, but we have veterans. We have veterans who, when there's a play called, know how to run the play. See what I'm saying? So that's an advantage we've got over the 11. What?
Giannis is 15? That what's going on? Anthony Davis trying to adjust from the college game he played in last year? Is that what you're telling me? That's part of the deal? Bam and Jimmy Butler were what? Were they playing Italy last year? Did I miss this? What is he talking about? And this is, it's easy to make fun of and it makes me laugh, but this is the disconnect. When people start giving you answers to problems that aren't answers to what actually is a problem, things are going to get bad. They're going to get worse before they get better. That's the salute. Don't worry. We've got veterans who know how to run the plays. Again, it's like me saying, don't worry. I know how to talk into a microphone with, no one's got this, words. I discovered it. Everyone else is doing something else. I got the words. It's the words. Words are words are words. They may not make sense or sound good when strung together, but I got that going on. Oh, my God. The Nets don't play defense. They don't like each other. They've got a group of guys. By the way, I know they're talented. I got it. If they were
an untalented version of these dudes, they'd be the Sacramento Kings, and we wouldn't be talking about them. I got it. I understand. Whatever, you're a hater. I'm not a hater. Do you know how many talented NBA players there are in the NBA, in the association, despite the fact that Kevin Durant seems to think they've cornered the market on guys who know how to run plays? There's a lot. So the actual plays that are run, the ability with which they get along with each other, their skill at closing, the rhythm they've built together, the momentum that they have, you know, as they go, all these things are significant. Their health. Just once, I would like to hear the Nets say, it's not easy to come together as a group of three. The history of the NBA shows this. We have championship aspirations, but, you know, our goal is to win this year, but we're not a sure thing, and we're going to have to fight like hell, not just against the teams we play, but as a group to be the group that we know we can be a few years from now. Now, you know why they're not saying it? Because they don't even know if they're going to be together, because they think things should be automatic, because they took the easy way out, because they want the cheat code. These are the guys that get bored of Monopoly after 20 minutes and decide, you know, let's just all get a bunch of hotels and roll the dice. And then when they lose, they throw the board across the room. It's not the way the world works. We've got veterans, so we know how to do this thing called dribble a basketball, unlike the other team, but I feel like we're going to be okay. The other guys aren't playing rugby. God, the Nets are so... And the thing is, I'd love those guys to be good. I like Brooklyn. I live there. I love that part of New York. I love New York. But Brooklyn's awesome, man. I look down today because I get dressed in the dark. I get up early. I have all these Brooklyn shirts that I'm proud to wear. I'll be walking around L.A. You from Brooklyn? And I'll say, I wish I was. That's my answer. Wish I was. I'm made to want the Nets to be good. But unlike Kevin Durant, I actually can see the world for what it is. Come on, man. This is why the Nets are the most unlikely of talented teams. The Clippers are more likely to win an NBA championship this year than the Brooklyn Nets. They are. And they're coached by Ty Lue. So I know what that statement means. All right, 855-212-4CBS, you want to give us a call. I got to talk about LeBron's injury. We got some Sam Darnold talk coming up. We're going to make fun of Urban. Lots of good stuff. But if you want to push back or agree, you want to give me your take on Brooklyn, we got you. 855-212-4CBS. Few phone calls, and how LeBron's lingering issues, and what a source told me, might mean the Western Conference is wide open next year on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Oh, welcome back. Bill Ryder with you. What's going on? Thanks for hanging out. Saturday, it's a big day of sports on CBS. Begin at 1 Eastern, 10 Pacific with the National Women's Soccer League Challenge Cup Final. Then at 3 Eastern, noon Pacific, it's off to the golf course, where some of the PGA Tour's best will be on the tee competing at the Wells Fargo Championship. That's all coming up Saturday on CBS. Phone number 855-212-4CBS. You know, it's interesting. I was walking back from dinner last night. My daughter, Madeline, made honor roll. And we said, you can go to any restaurant you want, right? Looking for like an In-N-Out Burger response or let's get some pizza. And she's like, let's go to insert most expensive Italian restaurant in the town I live in. And so we're coming back from dinner. Yeah, it was, oh my God, we crushed it too. A little bolognese. Had some, I don't know. I won't even tell you. It was amazing. I'm still full. My stomach hurts from dinner. And not making a judgment on mask wearing, although I think you should wear a mask. I make a severe judgment. But you don't know who's vaccinated, who's not. And there's a celebrity, a very famous person standing, you know, right across the street at a nice restaurant. And all three of us, my son Henry did not recognize him. And in his very famous voice, he goes, you're right, my bad. And she goes, no, really, the cedar, you have to cover your face. So he puts his arm over his nose and walks to the table. And I just thought, that would suck to be famous. Like, I'm assuming the guy, you know, probably forgot a mask. I don't know. But everyone's staring at this guy being like, I don't have one. No, sir, you have to wear it to the table. I wouldn't want to be famous. At all. All right. And it ain't going to happen. LeBron James is going to miss two more games. And if anyone can overcome injury and gut through pain, it's LeBron. But I do think that there's a warning sign that is flashing for the Lakers in a really significant way. There are a lot of guys, a lot of teams, a lot of players who are injured right now or banged up. You know, some version of James Harden, to Kawhi Leonard to obviously Jamal Murray is out for the remainder probably of the time. Donovan Mitchell is going to be back. We'll see when it is. I mean, I could go down the list. Joel Embiid had missed time, right? Everybody but Nikola Jokic. Everybody but Jokic, who's basically a top 10 or 15 player, has missed time. And some of those folks are going to come back. I think there's reason to be concerned about LeBron because, as I understand it from a Lakers source, this isn't like shocking breaking news, but LeBron has been put in charge of his own treatment as it relates to decision-making. He decided to come back, and he's decided to shut himself down. And I think what that means, LeBron brought himself back too quickly because it's not like LeBron James to return from injury and then immediately not play. Played a game and a half, basically, re-injured that ankle. Now he's going to miss at least three games in critical spots, and he knows they're critical. Critical games for the Los Angeles Lakers. And what it probably does is opens up in a very significant way the Western Conference, because even if LeBron returns, the fact that he can't play games at the end of the year, which is fairly unprecedented for LeBron, and the fact that he signaled that he's not okay, and I'll tell you why and how in a second. I'm gonna play translation machine with LBJ. Means that when he returns, at least for the first round, maybe more, he's not going to be the LeBron that you're used to. He's not going to be able to do the things he's done necessarily in the past. And it's not like they're going to play a 7 or 8 seed. They might be the 7 or 8 seed. There's a real chance the Lakers are going to go down. And one of my bosses at CBSSports.com, smart guy, has a theory and pitched me the theory. And I don't know where I come down on this. That if the Lakers don't make it out of the first round, and more to the point, fall to the play-in game and get eliminated, this NBA champion, in the eyes of the fans, won't be legitimate. And he made sort of a long case about why. I think he's right and he's wrong. I think in the short term, that'll be the narrative, and people will talk about it, and I'll even address it, and it'll be a thing. Just in my experience, any championship becomes a hallowed reality. I remember people saying and me writing that LeBron would never be the best player of all time when they lost another championship, this one to the Spurs, right? When he lost 2 out of 4. And it just isn't true. He went on to win one in Cleveland. He went on to win one with the Lakers, and it just rewrote reality. The Raptors felt like that wasn't a legitimate championship a couple years ago, right? You could have made the case the injuries that happened to the Warriors took away the legitimacy of Toronto's championship. And with Kawhi leaving and this team playing like garbage, you could make it more. But nobody says that. They won. It's a win. Heard it last year. It's a shortened bubble season. It's Disney. It's different. Does anyone now in any significant way doubt the Lakers won last year's NBA championship or it doesn't count? No. No, I think it's going to be absolutely and 100% real if it's Denver or if it's Miami or if it's Milwaukee, or it's anybody. Phoenix, Utah. I like Phoenix, man. Not against the field. I just think there's a lot of value there. The award season is bearing down on us. It's coming very, very soon. And as I mentioned, I think yesterday or the day before, I got the official word from the NBA that I will be voting for all of those awards, which is pretty exciting. And want to take that really, really seriously. Coach of the Year to me is the one that is one of the ones that's wide open. Now, for me, there's probably three guys that are on the list, maybe four. And in Vegas, there's three. I would probably add Doc Rivers, who I think is like 2,500. He's plus 2,500. He's 25-1. But then I would dismiss Doc Rivers because he's Doc Rivers, which, you know, I don't know if that's in the spirit of the award, but that's kind of where my head's at. But for me, it's Tom Thibodeau has to be, I want to say he's the front runner. Monty Williams, Tibbs, Quinn Snyder, to me, are the Coach of the Year front runners. And I know Monty Williams is the betting favorite. And if I had to vote today, I would. But I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Look, I take everything that I write seriously. I take everything I say on the radio seriously. I work really hard to talk to people behind the scenes. Many folks I won't cite. To have an opinion and a perspective that's rooted in actual reporting. But when I vote for awards, to me, it's a whole other level of responsibility because contracts and bonuses, to say nothing of historical reputations,
are on the line. Like, whether or not a guy can get certain max deals or not depends on some of the decisions that people like me make when you have the honor to do that. So I reserve the right to change my mind and everything, because I'm going to, and I guess I got to start doing that in the next few days. I'm going to call almost every GM in the NBA. I'm going to call everyone that I know, right? Like, every single person that I know, I am going to reach out to get a perspective. And I'm going to ask them for their take and their arguments for and against people. So, you know, let's set that aside. Tom Thibodeau is a guy that I mocked the decision-making of the front office. It didn't make any sense to my eye. No one expected the Knicks to be a playoff team, to say nothing of being potentially a top four team. And let me do another quick aside, like an aside. I feel like this is an Inception segment. We're just going deeper and deeper into my fever dream of voting. I needed the Atlanta Hawks against the New York Knicks. Can you imagine that series? Totally different teams. The Knicks can't score, but no one can score against the Knicks. And Atlanta is an offensive machine that doesn't play defense, although has more since they made a coaching change. Trae Young epitomizes that squad, Julius Randle, his squad. Totally different player. I love it. I love it. I think Atlanta wins the series too. Tibbs, to me, feels like the answer. But if Chris Paul doesn't get MVP consideration, right? That's another thing. Is you, if you have the most valuable player on your team, or one of them, then by the very nature, it takes away from, in some ways, the impact of the head coach. How hard is it to coach LeBron James? Like, with all respect to Frank Vogel, the best coaching job he's done this year is the now 22 or 23 games LeBron has missed. Like, that win the other night against Denver, that was a Vogel game, not a LeBron game. It was ugly. They played defense. They almost blew it at the end. They couldn't score at the end, but they found a way to get it done on a totally awful and ugly shot from a random, not really a random, but a young guy. So if I get Chris Paul on that ballot, it might deter a little bit from me, Monty Williams, being coach of the year. But man, look how good they are. Look how good they are. And by the way, they did have what? I think they were undefeated at Disney, right? I think they were. I think they went 8-0 in that bubble. So it's not like they were a really good team already without Chris Paul. And then there's Quinn Snyder. If the Jazz don't have a single guy who can be an MVP, right? Because you've got Chris Paul, who's borderline MVP. You've got Julius Randle, who I've been told is basically Jordan. So that's, you know, that sort of takes away from Tibbs. If you're not, well, Donovan Mitchell's injured, and Gobert's not an MVP candidate. He's a defensive player of the year candidate. This could be super interesting. All right, 855-212-4CBS. Bogus, did you take off yesterday because you wanted to just take in the Marvel stupid baseball game that the geniuses up at Bristol put together?
Yeah, it was supposed to be a surprise for you. I wish you didn't sniff this out, but the bosses heard me hemming and hawing and really just not coming through on my promises to you to watch all these movies. So they said, hey, Andrew, why don't you take a day, sit down, and watch as many as you can. That'll be your work day. Don't worry about DA or Jim Rome or WFAN. You just sit and watch as many movies as you can, starting after your shift the previous day, then all the way through the next full day to make Bill happy. And that's what happened yesterday. So Monday at like 2 p.m. Eastern time, I sat down, I hit play on the old streaming service, away we went, and now here I am this morning, ready to answer all Marvel Universe questions.
Who's your favorite Marvel character?
Yes, him. Thor.
Him.
Thor.
That's the one. The one. What was the saddest part of Infinity War? And really Endgame?
I mean, the end. The end is terrible. I don't want to give away spoilers, but I mean, the end is, I mean, it's heart-wrenching.
What character sacrificed another character to save the universe?
Again, you're asking me to give spoilers. I feel bad. Like people,
everyone's seen it. It's okay. Like 3 years ago.
Oh, I was the last one?
Yeah, you were it.
Right. Winter Soldier.
Okay. Do you have a cell? Do you have a... Winter Soldier. Winter Soldier sacrificed winter for summer. That's how summer came back.
This is how bad I am. Terrible. I turn on Monday night, the ESPN Marvel NBA broadcast, and they're asking... They're asking Anthony Mackie, who I know is Falcon,
NBA, yeah,
about being Captain America. And I'm like, he's not Captain America. What's going on? Lo and behold, apparently he's the new Captain America.
He's not really Captain. I mean, yeah, it's like the Disney streaming show. That show was terrible. That was, what was it called? Falcon and the Winter Soldier?
Yeah, very creative.
Spend your time on something else. That's what they should have called that particular. I don't know why I criticized WandaVision. That's the one I should have reserved my. Well, welcome back. We really missed you.
Thank you.
It's great to see you.
I missed you guys too.
Do you want to push me in either direction here on the old Monty Williams, Thibodeau, Quinn Snyder?
No, I don't want to. I don't necessarily have an opinion on strongly enough to push you. I mean, I want to say it's Thibodeau, but I'm always held back by like New York bias. But I can't believe that they are this legit this quickly under him. So, I mean, I kind of want to vote for him, but I don't know if that's, again, just me sitting here in New York and having Knick fans drooling about this for the last couple months.
It feels correct. The only thing I'll say is that if the Phoenix Suns finish first in the Western Conference, I think for those of us to vote, Monty Williams has to either be the number one choice or Chris Paul has to be on the ballot, right? I mean, it can't be like that team doesn't right. exist. They're going to win the Western Cup. That's where it's really tough for me. I do think most improved player is always the weird one for me because the standard can be anything from you were a nobody, now you're a contributor, to you started and made $20 million a year, but now you're a top 25 player, which is what Julius Randle is. I mean, Julius Randle, the new Chris Bosh improved. I think he might be the most – and I haven't looked into this category. He might be the most improved player. Like, that might be the Knicks thing too because – he is a top, man, the Ringer's top, I keep going back to it. The Ringer did a top 25 players in the NBA, and my main takeaway was, holy cow, there's some really great player. I knew this, but to see guys accurately put it 19 or 17 that in your brain you would just assume was a top 10 player was pretty amazing. I think Randle was a 23, which felt really right in the pecking order, made me laugh about some folks who have Randle as like the best player in NBA history because he's not even a top 20 player this year, but I think he... Maybe most improved is what we can give the Knicks fans to Julius.
Okay, I'm fine with that.
They're the most improved team.
Without a doubt. And maybe the most surprising team, because I don't know. Again, and I always hesitate with New York anything because I'm living it. I'm sitting here. There's nothing fake. There's nothing smoke and mirrors about this. Like, this is a legit team with home court in round one. And, I mean... I'd be surprised, but I wouldn't be shocked if they pushed a really good team in round two.
I mean, so you're already putting them in round two. Because the only thing
I think
Atlanta's the matchup right now. Right? It could change. That's a coin flip for me. I think that's a tough matchup. I'm looking at this. I mean, hell, any matchup's tough. The Heat are brutal if the Heat can win a couple more games. The Celtics, God, Celtics, Knicks. I don't think Celtics are going to win the games to do it, and the Knicks aren't going to lose the games, but that would be so much fun to watch the Knicks beat up on the Celtics.
Sure, but like if you're the Knicks, you want the Hawks to stay where they are. Like you want them in round one. You don't want anybody else you just mentioned.
I don't know. Atlanta might be one of the three hottest teams in basketball over the last like 6 or 7 weeks.
Remember that, by the way? Everyone all up in arms about Lloyd Pierce getting fired, and they think they've lost like 6 times since then?
Yeah, Lloyd Pierce, their fans' hearts, but it all worked out. I'm going to sell that, aren't you?
Wow.
Both made faces.
Wow.
It's too good. I feel like the guy who painted this, Michelangelo, that his name? No one appreciated him either when he painted the bleeping Sistine Chapel. Can't even talk. Yeah, just sell the whole
deal. It was a chandelier?
Yeah, it was a chandelier, right? I think I saw it once. To be fair, I had a lot of limoncello. On my honeymoon, I would order limoncello before dinner, and the waiters would be like, "You want the limoncello now?" But yeah, man, remember the limoncello?
That's why they hate America.
It was so good. All right, what else? What else we got, Jagan?
We've got the New Orleans Pelicans still in the hunt for a spot in that play-in tournament that LeBron dislikes so much.
Bounce feed up top, Lonzo.
They're playing it straight up. You can give it back to him.
Around the zone pick, drives, behind the back, fall away 15, put a right side, nothing but net for Lonzo.
Todd Graffinini, John DeShazer, Pels Radio. Lonzo added four free throws to that jumper to close out a 108-103 win over the Warriors. He finished with 33 the game after scoring just 7 on 3 of 18 shooting. Zion said Lonzo texted him to apologize for that.
You know, he just said, you know, my fault about last night, but I'm going to be there tomorrow. And I think, you know, those are big words, and you know, he knows what he's all about today. He came today, and he showed out.
The win has the Pels 2 games behind the Spurs for the final spot in that play. In the Clippers, down the Raptors 105-100 to snap a 3-game skid. The Suns outscored the Cavs 24 in overtime to win 134-118. Tim Hardaway Jr. hit 10 threes in the Mavs 127-113 win in Miami. And the Bucks beat the Nets for the second time in 3 days, 124-118. Brooklyn now a game and a half behind the Sixers atop the East. The San Francisco Giants almost swept a doubleheader from the Rockies.
3-2 pitch. Well hit to right field. And it is gone! Touch 'em all time, Charlie Blackmon. A walk-off winner.
Jack Horrigan on Rockies Radio. Blackmon's 3-run shot capping off a 6-run 7th for an 8-6 win in the nightcap. The Giants won the opener 12-4. The Cubs did sweep the Dodgers 7-1 and 4-3. LA's dropped 5-6, 8-10. The Pirates 2-1 winners in San Diego, and the Braves 6-1 winners in Washington. The A's down the Jays 4-1. They are 19-12, the best record in baseball. The Red Sox outscored the Tigers 11-7, and the Yankees beat the Astros 7-3. New York has won 9 of 12. The Broncos and Teddy Bridgewater reportedly redone the QB's contract. Bridgewater will now be a free agent next winter, a year earlier than planned. He'll make $11.5 million for the coming season, with Denver only paying $4.4 million of that. And hockey last night, the Oilers 4-1 winners in Vancouver. Connor McDavid, 2 assists, giving him 93 points in just 51 games. Bill, back to you.
Andrew Bogish, super Marvel fan, utterly just remarkably committed to the show. Thank you for your sacrifice. You are such a winter soldier, and I just want to thank you for that.
Well, thank you for noticing, and thank you for the Marvel-related compliment. I didn't miss that. I appreciate it.
And Andrew Bogish on Twitter, winter soldier. What an interesting character who's two-faced and isn't always what he appears. But also a hero. Let's talk a little Sam Darnold here and why I actually kind of like where his new organization is coming from when they talk about their belief in him and how it impacted their decision-making in the NFL draft. That's next on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Welcome back into the show. Oh, boy. Bill Ryder with you. What up? Happy Wednesday. Had to think about it for a second. Phone number here on the show, 855-212-4CBS, Twitter, Sports Writer, Sports, R-E-I-T-E-R. A little programming alert. Tomorrow and Friday, on top of doing this program, I will be filling in for Jim Rome on the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio and CBS Sports Network, so check that out as well, noon to 3 Eastern, 9 a.m. to noon Pacific time. I do marvel at the way in which people can be labeled failures very quickly, very early, relative to the actual development time of something, and that label sticks. And that doesn't mean that they're not going to be failures. It just means that sometimes the label becomes more important than the reality and the truth. Sam Darnold's going to be a really interesting test case of that fact. Because nobody can make an argument that is reasonable and based in facts, that's not just an emotional reaction to being a Jets fan, that the Jets over the Sam Darnold era were anything other than an abject disaster. And the kind of place you go to ruin your career if that's the position you play. And Darnold had some moments, right? He flashed some moments of possible success. First year was kind of what you would expect. started 13 games, 2018, right? Had some good moments. Had moments where Jets fans, like Tom DiBenedetto said accurately, I see it. Like, he's guy's skill. We gotta get there. Year two, first year, he had 17 touchdowns and 15 interceptions. Didn't complete a lot of his passes at 58% of his passes. But again, it's first year. You're starting him quickly. You're throwing him to the wolves. Second year, a little bit of progress. Got up to almost 20 touchdown passes in 13 games. 13 interceptions, right? Came down a little bit. Completed a much larger percentage of his passes at 62%. And again, had these flashes that he might be capable of breaking through. There's talent there. There's talent on the tape. Now, there's also talent on the tape for every single guy that gets drafted in the National Football League in the first round or any other round at the quarterback position. Doesn't mean that it's going to translate to the NFL. And when it happens occasionally in the NFL, doesn't mean that that's the answer, because occasionally doesn't cut it. That's part of the deal about being a quarterback in the National Football League. I get it. And then last year, the wheels fell off. By the way, he had a winning record, Darnold, in 2019. Doing 7-6 when he was able to start. Last year, he went 2-10. He threw only 9 touchdown passes. The same number of games, right? 12 as opposed to 13, but basically the same. His completion percentage bottomed out again. He just wasn't very good. And, you know, the story, the Jets moved on. Went and got Zach Wilson. Panthers went and got Darnold for not very much. It's not that long ago the guy was taken number 3 overall, which is a good lesson to remember. Right now, today, all this praise of Trey Lance, right? Oh, my gosh, and the talent, the ability. If he fails, it's going to be so obvious. I'm not saying that he will. I don't know. But it'll be, oh, man, guy didn't play in a year and didn't throw that many passes in college and didn't play at that high of a level. Like, what were the Niners thinking? Same people that are praising it now. But the Panthers are going to do the one thing, the only thing that can turn a career around, and that is belief. Everybody needs somebody to believe in them. I love Matt Rhule here saying and talking about, and their decision-making in the first round of the draft is predicated on the fact, and I he said it, I believe him, and more importantly, Sam Darnold's going to believe him. No, man, we believe in this dude.
I just believe in Sam. I believe that, you know, he deserves the opportunity to go out and play with us. And I think those other young quarterbacks are going to be fantastic players. But you know, the hit rate on first round quarterbacks isn't real high. And to have a chance to get J.C. Horn and have Sam Darnold, we just kind of felt like, hey, this is 2-for-1. Now we just have to make sure Sam's a great player for us.
He's right. The hit rate is not that high. The price for Darnold is very low. The ability to bring in more talent on that football team rather than another quarterback is it's a math question if you think Darnold can be good. Here are some quarterbacks who had terrible to bad third years and then rediscovered their ability elsewhere. Ryan Tannehill. And Tannehill does hand the football off to maybe the most talented and important player in the NFL who's not a quarterback offensively. I get it. It helps. But still, serviceable. Drew Brees. Drew Brees' third year, he threw 11 touchdown passes to 15 interceptions for a 58% completion percentage. That is pretty close if you adjust for games played, right? Because Darnold played fewer in Darnold's third year. Darnold, 9-11. Touchdowns, interceptions, completed a higher percentage of his passes than Drew Brees did in Drew Brees' third year. And Alex Smith. Alex Smith went, what, 1 touchdown to 11 interceptions his first year, 16-16 his second year, and got hurt his third year. And it just felt like, all right, that's not going to be the guy. Taken, remember, number 1 overall. There's a history for this. There's the possibility it's going to work out. To me, there's two giant questions in Carolina as it relates to Sam Darnold. Similar, I think, to the Jacksonville questions. I know you all think Trevor Lawrence is a sure thing, and I think he is too, but I haven't seen it yet in the NFL. One, is Sam Darnold capable of connecting with his talent, reconnecting with his talent? I think that's important. And two, is Matt Rhule a good NFL coach? Does his decisions mean anything? Does his ability to surround Sam Darnold with talent matter? Does Rhule know what talent is? Did they draft the right guy? That's also an open question. But if you think that Rhule's a pretty impressive head coach, I think Sam Darnold's got a real chance to be one of those few success stories. All right, 855-212-4CBS if you want to give us a call. I want to keep with the NFL conversation. Tim Tebow, man, are you... Is this an NFL... Am I in a Saturday Night Live skit? Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer'd in drama. I mean, seriously. Did Urban Meyer forget how to think? Tim Tebow and the starkest warning sign yet of several that Urban Meyer doesn't know what he's doing next here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Good morning, Bill Ryder with you, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments, and closing costs online in real time? Rocket can. There's a difference between a really good story and a successful story. I think we conflate those things a lot of the time. Urban Meyer, the perennial retiree and collegiate champion, is a great story in making the decision to jump to the National Football League. It is compelling theater. Can he win? Can he adjust? This meteoric rise over the course of his career, this unparalleled intensity that doesn't just burn out the opposition, but burns out the man behind that dominance again and again and again. Great story. Interesting story. Not the same thing as one that is sure to be successful. I love this quote. I say it a lot. I'm going to keep saying it a lot. Bill Parcells. People tell you who they are. Listen. And if I may adjust it somewhat, take its wisdom and apply it a little bit more broadly. People tell you what they're doing and what they're going to be doing and who they're going to be. Listen. So many things that have happened in sports in the last 5-6 years that were the most shocking shouldn't have surprised at all. The meltdowns, the successes, there have been signs along the way. I can't believe. So when I started doing radio, I'm pretty new to it. I'm 43. I was a newspaper writer for a very long time, a non-sports writer for a long time, then a sports writer in Kansas City for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years, then a columnist. I didn't speak on the radio, just my voice on any radio as a guest until I was in my 30s. So unlike a lot of radio hosts, right, this isn't what I've been trying to do since I was 22 years old. When I broke into radio was the Tim Tebow era. And I've spent a lot of my life, early in my career, talking about Tim Tebow when I didn't want to. And just, I can remember saying on some weekend show, if Tim Tebow doesn't make it with the Patriots, it's over. And when we stopped talking about it, then I thought that turned out to be fairly true. Then the SOB, and I mean that sarcastically, sort of. No, I mean it sarcastically, went and decided to play baseball. So we had to like hit that. But I really felt like Tim Tebow's football talk. The guy is 33. He is a failed NFL player. And even when I saw the rumors, Tim Tebow working out at tight end with the Jags, I didn't believe it. Then Tony Khan, who's the son of the owner and has some fancy title along the lines of senior football consultant because my dad owns the team and I will someday, which is good for that guy. And to his credit, was honest, came out and let the Tebow, if you will, out of the bag.
Tim has definitely come in and worked out. So beyond that, I can't say too much, but Tim has come in and worked out as a tight end. That's not, you know, not the position that we've seen him play sometimes, but as a position that he's been practicing at with us. Obviously, Urban knows Tim really well, and Tim's got a great history of winning, and Urban really believes he can help us, and I think it makes a lot of sense, and it's a position where we need to get better.
Look, the guy failed, so we put him in a position that he doesn't play. Feel like it's going to be great. He's a little too old. He's not fast enough. He's not good enough to play the other position, so we've got him at this other position. I can't tell you much other than our head coach doesn't know what he's doing. Somebody send my daddy a note. I'm very scared. Can you read the sign that says, send help, Urban Meyer's in charge? This is a joke, man. This is a joke. The National Football League is not a rehabilitation center for your friends' reputations. Look, this is not an anti-Tim Tebow rant. It's really not. Tim Tebow seems like a really nice guy. And he is, I think, you can argue, the most successful or one of the most successful And you can, if you want, probably argue and sub in great college football players of all time. Didn't translate, but amazing winner. And I referenced his stint in baseball. Didn't make it to the majors, but he grinded, and the guy could hit the ball. The hardest thing to do in professional sports is to hit a baseball. That is the hardest thing to do in professional sports. And he could do that to a degree that I think earned him some of the promotions he got in the minors. And he's good on TV, and he seems like a nice enough guy. This is not an anti-Tim Tebow rant, but can I tell you who's a really nice guy, who works really, really hard, who's smart, who has been grinding, and who has a range of skills that impress me? My producer, Tom DiBenedetto. Do you know what he should not ever do? Play tight end of the National Football League. What in the hell are we talking about here? No, the takeaway is not Tim Tebow sucks or Tim Tebow's, you know, privilege. I've seen that out there. And I get it, you're not wrong. But what, Tim Tebow's going to turn the opportunity down? The takeaway is that Urban Meyer doesn't know what he's doing. The takeaway is that Urban Meyer is the Linus of the National Football League. If he doesn't have his blankie, things are not going to be okay. The warm comfort of when I was in charge and I just, this is what it was like. And I'm not, can I just give you just a, here's a quick list. This is the kind of list that when Urban Meyer got hired, that someone like me would have like been like, let's go in the future for 7 months and do like some sound that I would have made up these three or four or five things, right? Like, and then people like, maybe it's funny, but writers stretching. That's dumb. That would never happen. So Saturday night, this is a Saturday Night Live skit. First, he selects his handpicked GM, Trent Baalke, as in, I balk at this decision because this is the same guy that couldn't get along with the last big-time college coach to make the transition to the National Football League. You know, the other Harbaugh, the guy in San Francisco, who, by the way, was it three NFC championship trips, and he made a Super Bowl. And Trent balks at getting along with people, could make it work. You know, I want as a GM? I need to find an egomaniac who doesn't recognize coaching talent, who can't guide someone's difficult transition to, you know, not being a dictator, who undermines the actual power. Who can I? I don't know. Well, I'm thinking about whether or not it's Baalke. Can you just take that knife and just put it on my back for me, buddy? Thanks. Oh, it feels so good. Love knife shoved in my back. That's one. Then he looked out at the landscape of potential strength coaches, right? Like there's none of those in America. And what I need to do is hire someone from the college game with limited NFL experience who left amidst allegations that are widespread, including from current NFL players, of racist behavior, and bring him into a diverse locker room at a time when social justice is an important conversational point. I need to show that I don't respect that side of the conversation and reinforce that the black experience is not significant to being a head coach in the NFL, but there's no one like that, sir. We went on LinkedIn and typed in that exact Chris Doyle's. Oh, yeah, Chris Doyle. It's a guy from Iowa, right? Let's hire him. That actually happened. Quote, we did a very good job vetting that one, end quote. Only if your desired candidate was the one I just described. Then, look, LeBron James whining about the play-in tournament is annoying, and we have made fun of him. And we should. But it is a new thing, right? You got to get used to it. That is, you may not know this, but I'm going to share it with you here on the program. NFL free agency is not new this year. It's not the first year. We're going to try something different. We're going to call it free agency, and we're going to end the... No. And Urban, mired in drama and dysfunction, literally complained about the process in March. I'm going to read you a quote. I love it when people in charge start with, I guess, which really means I don't know what I'm talking about. I guess in the old days, you could bring them in and meet them, have dinner with them. You find out the football intellect, find out their character. I'm not even going to read the rest of the quote because I can't get through it. Bro, you're not in college. You're not in college. I remember when I went to the University of Missouri, we had a bunch of welcome sessions and even the high school, Catholic high school in Dubuque, Iowa, where I went to high school, they gave me some advice on the way out. And I always was sort of amused by people saying, I think I heard it three or four times before I started my freshman year. Don't wear your Letterman jacket around college. And part of the reason I was amused is I was like, there are still Letterman jackets. Look, I was not a super athlete, but I was a pretty good tennis player my senior and junior year. And I don't think I had a Letterman jacket. And I got to campus and there were losers in Letterman jackets. And it was just like, dude, this isn't high school, right? Like, congratulations on being the best athlete from Dubuque, Iowa. Take it off. You're embarrassing all of us. Not just yourself, but people have to look at it. This Urban Meyer, I can't believe how free agent. Take off your Letterman jacket, you child. Take it off. You're not in college anymore. You're embarrassing yourself. You don't. Yeah, you're not going to be. And this is the real. This is one of the many concerns. Urban Meyer's anger and shock that he's not going to be able to have the most talented team, or one of the three most talented teams in the NFL because there's not recruiting is should not be a surprise. Then this past weekend, the dude conflated recruiting with drafting. Is Travis Etienne a bad pick? I mean, probably. I don't know. I can go Pete Prisco. I went through all Prisco's my colleague at CBSSports.com's old draft grades for like last three or four years. And to his great, I like giving Pete a hard time. To Pete's great credit, his wisdom. I mean, really, it's pretty amazing with hindsight how good he is at it. Except every running back is, I don't like this, it's a running back. Even at the end of the first round, you know, it's a B minus. It's a great. My top running back in the whole draft, a perfect fit for the Chiefs, but it's a running back in the first round, so no. Like, what? B minus? You can apply that standard. You can even not apply that standard, and it makes you worry because as the names started to fall, right, the names that Roger Goodell and others called out for the Jags selections over the course of the opening night and the weekend, these are all players who were drafted who have been offered scholarships by Urban when he was at Ohio State. Urban, there's other programs that have, you know, really good football players with uniforms and cleats and everything. And now he's bringing in a remarkable distraction. Think about, there are few places in America that are as diverse from a racial, ideological, in terms of where they come from, wealth, background, as an NFL locker room. It's a really cool experience. It's a really interesting experience. Like, you're not going to hear a lot of country music. You're just not going to hear a lot of country music in an NBA locker room. And you're not going to hear a lot of rap and a lot of R&B in a hockey locker room. You're just not. You're going to hear everything in an NFL locker room. It's big. It's boisterous. It's cool. It's a melting pot. It is, I think, the best version of America. I haven't been one, in a year and a half, more than that, a couple of years. But that also means you have to be attuned to the difficulties and the realities of what matters in America, because it's going to matter in your locker room. Think if you are in this time of difficulty and social unrest and disagreement, if you're a black man in the Jags locker room, and Urban Meyer thought it was okay to bring in Chris Doyle, right? Give that guy a chance. After very, very boisterous and numerous allegations of racist behavior. And then turned around and offered Tim Tebow at 33 the opportunity to try out for a position he doesn't play. To what degree, if you're one of those men in that locker room, do you believe this guy even remotely gets it? Forget agreeing with you, right? Forget the notion of being on the same, just having even an understanding or a respect for what that's about. So many signs Urban Meyer is probably going to fail. And what's going to be amazing about it is this: he's going to have every opportunity to be successful. Huge amount of money to spend in free agency, right? It's not like some of the jobs that are out there, the poor dudes in Texas, where they're in cap hell. Obviously, they had not traded away their draft stock. They'd done the opposite. Two first-round picks, including this unicorn of a quarterback at a time where that is even more so than 10 or 15 years ago, the most important thing in the National Football League. And utter freedom to do it. If the Jags fail, if Etienne is the wrong pick, if Trevor Lawrence flames out, the blame he's going to take is going to be amazing. But here's the reality. Everything that happens in Jacksonville is going to be an indictment on Urban Meyer. No one else is going to be to blame, even if they're going to bear a lot of the responsibility. Because Chris Doyle and Trent Baalke and Tim Tebow are all mistakes on their own that call into question the judgment of the guy who's in charge. They happen together in the span of a few months. I think the Jags are going to be a freaking disaster. Okay, 855-212-4CBS if you want to talk about Urban mired in dysfunction already. I mean, I've been sitting on the name Urban fired. Feel like that's going to be like 3 years from now. But I don't know, man. We could be there a lot sooner than we thought. Urban fired sooner than we thought. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. Let's, God, it is a lack of self-awareness Wednesday. Let's talk Brett Favre. And the irony is, I think his insights are interesting. But it's just like, it's like Dexter giving you a breakdown of what's wrong with sociopathic killers. Dex, you're the wrong guy, my man. Brett Favre on Aaron Rodgers. Next on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Oh, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Patrick James on Twitter has a new name for Urban Meyer. This will be fun. We're going to do it. Sports Writer, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. Urban Meyer in a no-confidence locker room. Yep. That works too, Patrick. I love it. It is amazing the way not just in which history repeats itself, but those that have a certain history inflicted on them have a higher rate of inflicting it later on those that they have eventually have power over. That's true in ways, you know, dark and not so dark. One of the things that I loved about Brett Favre was his fearlessness and his clear passion and love for the game. He was a gunslinger, right? He really was. And his exit was ungracious and wrong and not good for the Packers. And not easy for Aaron Rodgers to navigate. And as a Bears fan, I hate Brett Favre for both. I hate Brett Favre for making me like him. And I hate Brett Favre for making me like Aaron Rodgers. Because what Rodgers had to endure as part of that transition is easy to forget how brutal that was. Aaron Rodgers wasn't Aaron Rodgers. Then he was the guy that fell. That just sat in that draft room and looked miserable. And now, all these years later, Aaron Rodgers is, along with Brett Favre, one of the great quarterbacks in the game's history. And he's inflicting the same kind of damage on Jordan Love. He is. It's not his job to make life easy, but think about if you're Jordan Love, by the way. He's making Jordan Love's arrival part of the reason he's going to go. That is not going to make it easy for Jordan Love to be successful. Can you imagine how Rodgers probably treats that guy behind the scenes? So, we've got ironies stacked on top of ironies, and one of them is Brett Favre psychologically reading Aaron Rodgers, accurately, by the way, I think, but sounding so tone-deaf and clueless. This is like what we all should have, how we should have regarded things when we watched The Sopranos. There were no good, breaking news, there were no good guys in The Sopranos. Every good guy in The Sopranos died at the hands of the characters we rooted for. That's the great trick. What's the line from The Usual Suspects? Kaiser Soze's great trick. The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist. The great trick of Sopranos was convincing you there were good guys. There were no good guys. Everybody was bad. They're all sociopaths. Tony was a sociopath. He was a murdering sociopath. And we still mourn him because, yeah, he got in that final scene. Stop with the whole they just cut to black and eat his pancakes. There's no good guys here. I'm going to read you Brett Favre's insights because I think they're interesting. And I think they're accurate. This is like Jose Canseco being the voice of reason on steroids. Like, you're right, but can you also shut up? It's kind of both. All right. here's Favre. Or as Ben Stiller said in something about Mary Favre, knowing Aaron, and I think I know him fairly well, if he has a grudge, whether it be against the organization or a player or an arch rival, family, friends, he ain't budging. Just time out. Bro, we all know about the family thing. It's just, even I don't always say it on the radio. You went there, huh? You're going to make it hard on the way in and on the way out. Got it. All right, let's keep going. It's Brett Favre. Quote, I don't see him coming back if this is not resolved, whatever the issue is. Even if it's resolved, but he feels like they have one up on him, he ain't going to play. Now, on Aaron, he would sit. This is to WISN-TV in Milwaukee. Damn, dude. Also, he dropped the family thing. But I think since it's been put into the record, let's address it. Families have falling outs. Family have people that don't talk to each other. It's sad and it happens, right? And I have no insight on Brett or on Aaron Rodgers' family situation, and probably neither do you. And I'm not making judgments on Aaron Rodgers or his family members. I'll just say that to have a schism with your family on a level that means that you don't have a relationship to a reasonable or meaningful degree speaks to a willingness, even if you're right, to just let that be that. If you can have a break with your family, right or wrong, right? You can be in the right. I don't know. You can certainly have a break that's permanent with the Green Bay Packers. And Packers fans and folks who feel like, no, this will never happen because of his connection to the organization. No, he's been through some separations. He's been through some changes. Whether he is in the right or the wrong, or it's more complicated, which it usually is, he's made it clear to himself he can make a full break with people and places that define much of his life until he decided they didn't. Congratulations, Denver Broncos, I guess. If the Broncos get Aaron Rodgers and they win a Super Bowl, does that make those two back-to-back Super Bowls, right? You just take, I'm talking consecutive Super Bowls for organizations, the two most undeserving in the history of professional sports. I mean, do you really believe that the Broncos deserve Peyton Manning? And they certainly don't deserve Aaron Rodgers. They haven't been well-run. They haven't made good decisions. Like, you're going to, and by the way, if he goes to Denver, they might win a Super Bowl. It's not an easy road, obviously, but they might. You know, we knew what we were doing all along. We were going to draft quarterbacks, sign others, have them all be incompetent, ruin them, and then when Aaron Rodgers wanted out, we were going to be the landing spot. But it could go that way because luck is such a more important factor in the National Football League success than anything else. It certainly looks in retrospect like the Patriots got lucky with Tom Brady. But they did get lucky. They passed on Brady again and again and again like everybody else. I can't believe the dude's going to be a Denver Bronco. Although the Broncos deserve him more than, say, the Raiders. The Niners are really the team that I think you can argue pretty aggressively have built an organization, have a leadership structure that deserves a break at the quarterback position. Brett Favre weighing in on Aaron Rodgers with accuracy is like Andrew Bogish weighing in on Marvel with accuracy. Like, I don't know if I like it, but I suppose I would listen to it. How was your day off, by the way, Bogus? You guys, like, did you go party?
No, did absolutely nothing.
You just chilled?
Just took it easy, yeah.
Well, I just saw a kid in the background. It's all happening.
Yeah, homeschool, you know, virtual school, baby. We're doing stuff all the time, around me.
You guys are still doing virtual school?
Yeah, we're almost done. Like 7 weeks left and we're done.
We're back, and we were really conservative here in LA, and we're back to full school.
I mean, the school is open. We chose to keep our kids home. They could go, but this is our choice. And partially theirs. We started at home, gave them the option if they wanted to go back mid-year, and they both wanted to stay here, so we're finishing the year at home.
We did trade our middle child for a kid to be named later and a vacation to Cancun, so that's...
Cancun was really the crux of that trade. Great trip.
Great. Kids can't go to school, but we're going to Cancun. Great, great trip. All right, each of you guys, if you have to bet.
Cancun was great.
Let's say you had to bet $1,000. You're forced to bet $1,000 where Aaron Rodgers, for whom he'll be the quarterback week one of the NFL season. You can include the Packers. Where's your money go?
Can I just bet on the field on non-Packers? You want a specific
answer? I bet on the team.
I'll make this a true gamble. I'm gonna go Broncos. I'll bet $1,000 on that.
All right. Tommy?
I'll still say the Packers. I mean, it looks really, really bad. And I believe Brett Favre. I don't think it's crazy that he might not go back. I think we can all see that that's a possibility, even if they refuse to trade him. It's just the same problem we've been talking about all offseason with Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson. What is the compensation package look like for Aaron Rodgers, especially after the draft? To me, the only team that could have possibly pulled it off was the Jags. If the Jags really wanted to say, you can have Trevor Lawrence, give us Aaron Rodgers, then okay. But short of that, I mean, I just don't know. Maybe he holds out. Maybe this is how his career ends. But I don't really see that either. So I'll bet the Packers.
I'll go Broncos. I think that the fact that Aaron Rodgers will hold out, will retire, means that that GM will either, Gutekunst, will either be fired if he doesn't fix it, or he'll be fired anyway, and a new GM will come in, liberated from the drama, and be like, you know what, this is my chance to move on from Aaron Rodgers, and I probably have to, but can pull the trigger in a way where he's not responsible. Like, I'm cleaning up the other guy's mess. There's a third scenario where the new GM just like, come back, we're sorry. But the moment you do that, you cede all power to Aaron Rodgers indefinitely. I think I'm with you, Bo. I think he's going to be a Bronco.
I mean, the thing that's off the table now, which would normally be my hesitation, is it doesn't seem like teams care anymore about dead money on the cap and cap charges. Like, so the Packers, I think, will eat what they have to eat if they have to move him here. And I think that he, I'm going with you on this. I think that he is principled enough. That's not the right word, but I can't think of a not mean word to use, but he will not show up. I think that's a real possibility where he just puts his fingers in his ears, goes, nanny poo-poo, I can't hear you, until they actually have to do something to get rid of him, and then they have to move him somewhere. It can't be in the NFC, so that's half the league is gone, and you end up in Denver.
You had me at nana nana boo-boo, by the way. I mean,
very professional.
That's pure. Oh, no, you did. Does he have his thumbs in his ears?
Yeah, and like the whole thing, nanny nanny poo poo. I can't hear you. The whole thing.
You're right. Aaron Rodgers is a cutthroat dude. I mean, he has showcased that on the field and in general. I think he's, and as for the compensation part of it, I mean, you're right, Tom, that the compensation packages are massive. I think the difference here is that Aaron Rodgers is willing to set everything on fire. And I think he will sit out. And so that just drives the price down in a really significant way. Hey, let me ask you guys this. Do either of you believe, and if you do, I just love to hear it, do either of you believe Aaron Rodgers is bluffing? We'll back off. If the Packers, like, don't swerve, do either of you believe Aaron Rodgers will be like, you know what, we figured it out and everything's okay? Because I don't believe. I think he's intractable.
So, I mean, I think there's a difference between bluffing and then just giving in. Like, I think his intention right now is to get his way. I don't think that this is all nonsense, all BS, that this is just him posturing. I think he might get to the point where it's July, August, and go, all right, I'm actually not going to go be a Bronco. But I think right now he's prepared to go as far as he needs to go to get himself out of the situation.
But you think he will buckle? I don't think he will buckle. I think he's going to be intractable. That's my guess.
Clearly, I think there's space for that if I think he might come back to the Packers. And, you know, he's so fickle, too. That's the thing. The thing is, like, is the way that he is publicly presenting himself, it's kind of like he's all over the place. Now, it's possible that, I mean, we know his media savvy. We know he knows what he's doing. It's possible that he is kind of trying to create chaos. Obviously, targeting the first day of the draft is a great example of something that you would do if you specifically wanted to create chaos and make people think that you were maybe more unstable than you are. So maybe this is part of a bigger plan, and that there is something that the Packers can unlock or say that will cause him to back down. And I'm willing to believe that that's a possibility. Yeah. But I'd also wouldn't be that surprised if he stayed away. And I mean, imagine if two of the top five quarterbacks from last season in the National Football League are sitting week one, are not playing, and are sitting at home.
it's not that long ago, and again, this is where there's precedent for this all, but Andrew Luck didn't make it about firing his GM, but he left the game at a much younger age.
Right.
So it's not unreasonable, right? There's a historical precedent that quarterbacks who are unhappy aren't full of it. We just presume, like, no, guys are going to want to play to the end of their careers, and, like, it's the Michael Jordan thing where you can't give up. It's the Brett Favre thing. You can't – Aaron Rodgers is a different – he's a different cat, man. Like, I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me if he's actually totally willing to not play if he doesn't get exactly what he wants.
But we also don't know, and that's what I was going to say, that last part is we don't know what his actual goal is right now. We don't know if he wants out, if he wants a new GM, if he wants a ridiculously huge contract that he does not deserve in terms of his age and whatnot. Like, we don't know exactly what he is going after right now, which, again, makes it hard to say, like, is he going to buckle or not? Because he might get close enough to what he actually cares about winning here and take it and be okay and still be a Packer.
I mean, that's the beauty of Sports Talk Radio. We got to try to give an opinion and a perspective. If we knew, it'd be a lot easier. I mean, I'm with you. This isn't a Marvel movie. All the Marvel movies you've seen, where there's a beginning, a middle, and an end already. Man, you watched all
of them. I've seen most of them at this point after yesterday.
Have you slept?
In a Marvel movie. I slept last night. I was basically up from mid-afternoon Monday through yesterday.
What'd you like better, the Spider-Man movie in Europe or Black Panther 2?
I saw the Spider-Man in Europe movie. Is there a Black Panther 2? I think you're trying to trick me here, Bill.
I was trying to do it. Wakanda forever, baby. Wakanda forever. It almost worked, but Tom made a face. All right. Let's do an update. I'm really excited. I'm excited to see what's... Is there any soccer? Let's just do a little spoiler. Any soccer?
There is soccer. Yes. That's last. First is Aaron Rodgers, actually. There's a new wrinkle to all of this. The Athletic says Rodgers has been mocking GM Brian Gutekunst in group texts with teammates. Rodgers might have called him Jerry Krause, who infamously drove apart the Jordan Bulls. So I guess now Rodgers is Michael Jordan in this scenario?
I mean, yes, since Jordan punches people in the face and wow. Yeah, you guys are right. It's all going to work out.
In regular football news, Teddy Bridgewater has reportedly agreed to a revised contract. Now that he's in Denver, Bridgewater will now be a free agent after this season with 2022 cut from his deal. He'll make $11 million for the coming season. $7 million of that comes from Carolina as a signing bonus. In the last 2 weeks, the Bucks have swept two-game series with the Sixers and the Nets. They beat Brooklyn last night 124-118 thanks to an 18-1 fourth-quarter run. But Brooklyn didn't have James Harden for either game. Ben Simmons missed both of those Sixer games, while Joel Embiid only played in one of them. Mike Budenholzer kind of cares about that.
They're both going to be good. They're both, got guys that are missing. So, it's competitive. It's good to get a win. It's important, to be playing well going down
the
stretch.
His team is a game and a half behind the Nets, who are a game and a half behind the Sixers for first in the East. The Suns staying tied with the Jazz atop the West with a 134-118 OT win in Cleveland. Chris Paul, 23 points and 16 assists. The Clippers stopped the three-game skid, 105-100 over the Raptors. The Mavs won 127-113 in Miami. They're fifth in the West this morning. And the Pelicans beat the Warriors 108-103. Steph Curry scored just 2 points, missing 10 of 11 shots over the final 16 minutes of that one. The Astros back at Yankee Stadium for the first time since being caught cheating. There were boos, angry signs, and inflatable garbage cans. Giancarlo Stanton says Yankee fans did their job.
That was intense. I wouldn't want to be on the other side of that. So, yeah. Yeah, they brought
Stanton
some heavy.
Did his job as well. Four hits and a homer in a 7-3 win. The Blue Jays about to call Buffalo home again. The team announcing they'll return to their minor league stadium starting June 1st after spring training and 2 months of the season in Dunedin, Florida. The Pittsburgh Penguins, 7-3 winners in Philadelphia, retaking sole possession of first in the East Division. And here's your soccer. Chelsea and Real Madrid play the second leg of their Champions League semifinal in London, 3 Eastern. They're 1-1 on aggregate. Man City beat PSG yesterday, so they await in the final. Bill, back to you.
I think we can all agree, go Chelsea. Boo Real Madrid.
Hell yeah. And that one goal for Chelsea is Christian Pulisic. That's an American goal. That's USA 1, Real Madrid 1. So let's push it over the line here.
Take that, Spain. Take that, Spain. We need Real Madrid to have its entire team be injured today, by the way, just for La Liga purposes. Is that wrong to say out loud? I don't care.
It's a little bit.
Not severely. I don't want anyone to be like, just, you know, oh, my hamstring. Can't play against Seville this weekend.
Widespread severe cramping.
What? They're going to try a new thing and not drink water for 3 days. That's all that I want. Andrew Bogish, enjoy more Marvel films.
Thank you. Can't wait.
You should check out Thor 6. It's really good.
There's only 5 Thors, Bill. Even I know that.
At Andrew Bogish on Twitter. Buy or sell next year on CBS Sports Radio.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
So, Bill, your Cubbies swept both sides of their doubleheader over the Dodgers yesterday. In Game 1, Chicago managed to chase Clayton Kershaw after just one inning, making it the shortest start of his Hall of Fame career. In Game 2, they waited out Trevor Bauer before winning in extras. Tonight, they go for the outright series sweep, and they'll have to do it through Walker Buehler. Buy or sell, the Cubs finish the deal and sweep the Dodgers by beating Kershaw, Bauer, and Buehler.
Have to sell.
Sell.
In large part because I got to play the odds here. You're going to beat. What they did to Kershaw was amazing. The Cubs are red hot in terms of their offense, not necessarily their pitching. But no, Walker Buehler is an ace. He's actually the ace of that staff. He will this is what aces do. You put the brakes on skids. Dodgers win. I think they win big today.
So the Astros made their first visit to Yankee Stadium in the wake of the cheating scandal, which gave them an unfair advantage back in the 2017 season when they defeated the Yankees in the ALCS. Let's take a listen to how the fans in the Bronx greeted Jose Altuve. It kind of says it all.
Altuve should expect 3 days of this.
So that's Michael Kay on yes. Buy or sell, you're still nowhere near feeling bad for these Astros.
Oh, buy.
Buy.
Buy or sell, Tom, for you, that I can rename Jose Altuve Jose Albuve.
Buy. Buy.
That's a double buy. I love that. Albuve.
Yeah, buddy. Albuve.
Albuve.
Hell yeah.
All right, according to Woj, earlier this morning, Sacramento Kings guard Tyrese Halliburton has no ligament damage to his left knee, but will likely miss the rest of the season anyway. He won't require surgery and is expected to make a full recovery, but it does, of course, as I just said, mean the end of the season for one of the most impressive rookies this year. Here's how the Rookie of the Year odds look right now. LaMelo Ball, the leader by a lot at minus 500, then Anthony Edwards behind him at plus 275, and Tyrese Halliburton at plus 700. Buy or sell, you are as confident as Vegas that LaMelo Ball has already locked up the Rookie of the Year.
So, I was out with my guy Nick from Charlotte yesterday. I think Anthony Edwards has a real chance, and I think he's probably my favorite right now. But again, I haven't done the reporting and the research I need because I'm going to be an actual voter. But it's a very close call for me.
Another Woj report, and that's illustrating some difficulties the Indiana Pacers are having with their head coach Nate Bjorkgren. Apparently, his future with the franchise is uncertain. He has significant work to do with his relationships among players throughout the team and with some members of the organization. He has thus far shown a willingness to try to address those issues, these sources said via Woj. Pacers are 30-34, ninth in the Eastern Conference. They've had a rough year. They've had injuries and other issues. But it's Bjorkgren's style of coaching and communication on the court and behind the scenes that has been also a cause of turmoil for the team this season. He has one more guaranteed year. This is his first year as the Pacers coach. Buy or sell, Nate Bjorkgren will still be the Pacers coach at the start of next season.
Look, this could be, I believe the report, it certainly could be one of the people he's insulted leaking it to put pressure on the organization. But I think that pressure is pretty serious now. When these kind of reports come out, combined with a lackluster season, you're not going to survive. I think it's a sell.
Sell.
You got to be able to get along with people in that job or be really successful.
Braves pitcher Huascar Ulloa hit a 420-foot grand slam, 427-foot grand slam in Atlanta's win over the Nationals yesterday, the longest of the 13 grand slams hit by pitchers since 2006, according to ESPN Stats and Info. It really was a bomb. It's also his second home run this season. It's also his second home run in as many starts. He didn't allow a run in either start either, so that makes him just the third pitcher since 1913, again, according to ESPN, to homer in consecutive starts without allowing a run, joining Rick Ankiel in 2000 and Don Larson in 1958. Also, two home runs while pitching is now more than Shohei Ohtani, who only has one. So buy or sell, Ohtani will end up with two more homers as a starting pitcher this year to pass Ulloa by the end of the season.
Bye. I actually was thinking to myself, at some point, if Ohtani pitches even once a week, he's going to beat that record. He's going to, at some point, homer in three consecutive games in which he's also the starter. Man, Ohtani. It all roads. What's that Beatles song? The long and winding road that leads me back to Shohei Ohtani. I mean, this guy is just a freaking marvel. Everything about him is interesting. Do you know over the weekend he stole two bases on Sunday in that game?
He's amazing.
He's a machine.
It's an experience watching him play. And it's unfortunate that it doesn't feel like he has a lot of eyeballs on him, especially on the East Coast so far this year, because he is amazing. He is a machine. Unfortunately,
I'll
the
go
Angels
so
are
far
also
as to
the
say
same,
he,
though.
he might be the best player in baseball. Yeah. I was thinking about this yesterday.
Yeah. And he might also just flat out be the most entertaining player in baseball. He's certainly more entertaining than his teammate.
He's certainly the most I think he's the most captivating player in baseball. But if he pitches once a week and he wins a high percentage of those games and pitches well and he keeps hitting this way, just in pure value, I think he'll be the MVP.
But the team is 13-15. Their run differential is minus 25. They lost by a lot yesterday on a day that Mike Trout homered. I mean, they unfortunately look like the same Angels.
Oh, it's awful. I mean, because you might have the best player of the last two generations, the most interesting player in three or four generations, and it's going to add up to being a bunch of mediocrity.
All right, we'll end here. Two of the NBA's hottest teams play tonight. Believe it or not, those two teams are the Knicks and the Nuggets. Denver is trying to bounce back from a rough showing against the Lakers after previously rattling off five wins in a row. New York, on the other hand, is just thrashing through the league. They're winners of 12 of their last 13. They're already 2-0 on this current Western Conference road trip. Denver are 3.5-point favorites tonight, of course, at home. Buy or sell a Nuggets win and cover against the Knicks.
It's a hard one. I'm going to buy based on the reaction they're going to have to that Lakers loss. The fact that there is an altitude reality, and that is for the Knicks, a up-tempo team in terms of defense. Not offense, right? But just you're really active, and it's a thing, man. Going to the Mile High City, it's a physical adjustment. Did the Knicks play last night? It's not a back-to-back, right? So a little adjustment time. Yeah, I think it's a great. This is what the NBA should be, by the way. Can you imagine if a year ago we had said that the Nuggets and Knicks were must-watch TV? It's amazing.
Yeah, and when you add like the Jazz and the Suns to that, and now the Hawks playing this entertaining brand of basketball, the fact that the Bucks have become a powerhouse with a multiple-time MVP, yeah, I mean the league is a lot healthier than I think people are giving it credit for right now.
If the season ended right now, this is amazing. Denver would play Dallas, the Clippers would play the Lakers, the Knicks would play the Hawks, and the Bucks would play Miami. And that doesn't include the fact that Boston-Charlotte as a 7-8 is really interesting, I think, and Portland-Golden State as a 7-8 is incredibly interesting. And if Golden State were to win that right now, they would play Phoenix, who I think Phoenix would stop them. But, you know, if I'm wrong about Phoenix and Steph goes off for four games, it's going to be such an incredible NBA postseason. Thank you, Brett Favre. Thank you, Brett Favre, for topping Jose Canseco, for being the worst messenger on the most accurate thing that needed to be said. That was pure freaking magic. You know what? Brett Favre, he gets a pass on Bum of the Week for the next 6 months. Doesn't matter what he does. He gets a straight Bum of the Week pass. I will be back here tomorrow also filling in for Jim Rome on the Jim Rome Show. So I'll be on CBS Sports Radio 5 hours tomorrow. Thank you to Tom. Thank you to Andrew Bogish. And thank you for listening. My name is Bill Ryder, and we'll see you back here tomorrow on CBS Sports Radio.